Clyburn, a three from the left side for Chris. That's no good. Long rebound to Hutchison, but now his pass stolen by Jordy Johnson, nice, who lays it in. Jordy, heads up play, quick as a cat in the backcourt. Yeah.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Out of Line. It is bright and early Sunday morning. I'm Brian Feldman. I'm here with Missy Lind and Chris Magnum Chapman, producer extraordinaire, future Hall of Fame producer. We've got some new chairs we're sitting in here in the Fox Sports studio, which is pretty damn cool in my opinion. I like them. I think a few people here could have probably rather had to raise the new chairs, but hey, there's new chairs! I'm not sinking. I don't feel like I'm 3 feet tall every week. That's pretty cool. Well, we are here every Sunday morning, as I said, from 8 to 9 on Fox Sports Radio, 1340 AM, and that is 98.9 FM. And today is UNLV basketball started their Mountain West Conference season last night. We'll talk a little bit about that. You heard a highlight a second ago. And, hey, tune in. We'll be here all day. If you want to give us a shout, go right ahead. Please feel free to. The Fox Sports studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is pouring out thanks to Bubby's University on South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo, a great place to watch every game. As I mentioned, UNLV basketball today, the Mountain West Conference schedule began last night at the Thomas and Mack for the Rebels, and Boise State did a number on them, 83-74. Missy and I talked to the Run Rebels point guard, Jordan Johnson, after the game, and you'll hear that interview shortly. We are smack dab in the middle of bowl season, and sideline SAS co-hosts Emily Van Buskirk and Kaylee Krish will be joining us to break down the biggest games still yet to be played. And we got to talk about a parlay card that I got. It's pretty cool. Also, fact, this is all about Missy Lynn today and something called Boomerang. We'll talk to you about that in a little bit. Blazin' will feature an NBA record breaker and nightcap. Yeah, the Vegas Golden Knights, man. The winning streak is again at 6 games and counting. We'll get you ready for today's game against Toronto, and it is the final week of the NFL regular season, and when today is over, the playoff picture will be completely clear. It's fairly clear now. AFC's a little cloudier than the NFC, but we'll talk about that as well. The NFL picks of the week. I have won 4 weeks in a row, and with a win and a Dewey loss today, I could tie him for first place at the end of the regular season. But because the race is really tight, the Dew Man will be chiming in with his pick live this morning. We're taking the picks all the way through the Super Bowl, so nobody can win at the end of this week. What's on Tap is brought to you by Bubby's University, where you can earn a degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff. The only major is good times. Bring your Rebel ID and your first beer is free. You can roll 24 hours a day. Yes, that means they never close. Bubby's University at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. Go to bubbysuniversity.com for more information. Missy, we saw UNLV play a few games this year. I've seen them play every game but one. You've seen them play, I think, 3 or 4 by now.
Yep.
And last night was disappointing.
They were playing a really good team. So was it expected? Maybe. But it was definitely still a good game back and forth. You know.
The first half I thought was a good game. I thought that UNLV played like I expected them to play. They were, you know, again, the one thing that's really disconcerting, aside from everyone who wants to talk about the guard play and the lack of offensive production out of the guard play, not getting the ball down in the low post to Brandon McCoy, these are the things that you hear most people complain about, Mags. But to me, what I'm complaining about, and I mentioned when I first thing, I have two words right now that I would spend a lot of time in practice on the next couple days. Box out. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, they got destroyed on the boards, which is kind of sad considering they had Shakur Houston, who was maybe the best player on the floor last night.
Nah, and, not even close. Well, Chandler Hutchinson was the best player on the floor last night.
I would make the argument that Chandler Hutchinson also had the better team around him last night, so that maybe made him look like the better player. But what you know? The rebounding was bad, but you know, to me, it seemed more like UNLV shot themselves out of the game. You know, I mean, unfortunately, I wasn't there. I was in the studio doing the score updates and all that stuff, but. It just sounded like they took a lot of really bad contested shots. One player in particular who has a habit of doing that, who we thought would have learned.
Hero ball!
Who we thought would have learned, you know. Because
I love Gerard Mooring. I'm
sorry.
Because
apparently that was a teaching moment, but it hasn't changed the fact that this one particular player continues to take bad shots.
It's like a bad habit, you know. You know you're an alcoholic and you shouldn't have a drink.
But then you walk past
somebody who's got a brown bag in their hand on the street. You assume it's a beer and you got to stop and have one. He just can't stop chucking from the rafters.
Well, and the players will tell you it's his team. So, you know, I guess, you know, the other guys on the team are okay with that. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. I'm not part of the team, but that would certainly be the indication when you hear guys say, well, it's his team, so we allow him to kind of run the show. Well, that's fine then.
2 of 14 from the floor, 2 of 9 from three-point land. You can't win when putting up numbers like that.
It's not just him, though. I mean, what were they, 4 for 21 or something like that from three?
6 for 22.
Yeah. 6 for 22, yeah. You know, and there was a point where, you know, I mean, the first basket of the game was a Clyburn three. So, you know, it seemed like maybe in the first half that UNLV was going to win this game because they certainly played like what we would have expected them to play in that first half. The second half, completely different story. I think there was an 18-4 run that really separated Boise from UNLV, and that was culminated with a Brendan McCoy technical foul where he was frustrated because he was beating up the floor. And then he slammed the ball in frustration and given the tee. You know, from that point on, after that, it seemed like, again, it was a pretty even game. You know, but that one little run by Boise, to me, was the difference in the game. I mean, clearly it was. But, you know, Leon Rice is a good coach. He gets, the best out of his players. And, you know, a lot of fans in Vegas may not like him because of past transgressions. But, you know, I think Boise's a good team. I don't know if they're the best team in the Mountain West Conference, but what I do know is UNLV now has an opportunity where they need to win their next 5 games because they're all against teams that they should beat.
Well, first of all, I think it's good for them to get to go on the road in their next game. Get out of here. Go on the road. You're playing a San Jose State team that is inept. I mean, this team should be in the basement of the Mountain West Conference when it's all said and done. It's a great way for UNLV to go retread on the road, play a team they can beat, and then they get to come back to the Thomas and Mack next Saturday and play a Utah State team that is also very beatable. And that should propel UNLV as Magnum's saying.
Back.
I think then they can go to Air Force and potentially win that game in Colorado Springs.
You know what?
It's gonna be a tough game, Mags.
I never look at Air Force and say that UNLV should go and, I mean, look, on paper, UNLV is a much better team than Air Force, but there's something about playing at Clune Arena. Look, the Kevin Kruger team lost at Air Force.
Brother, it's the altitude. It's the altitude. It really changes the way you play the game.
I began my radio career in Colorado Springs, so I'm familiar with the city. And, you know, it's high up. I lived literally 5 minutes from the entrance to the Air Force Academy, and my apartment was at over 7,200 feet. So, you know, everyone makes a big deal about playing at Laramie, but Colorado Springs is just as high. It's a smaller arena than Memorial Coliseum in Laramie. Air Force runs a gimmick offense that a lot of teams are not familiar with, whereas Wyoming, right now, they're playing a little more up-tempo. But, you know, that's not an easy game, especially for a young, inexperienced team like UNLV.
But you hear what I said.
They should go to San Jose, and they should just absolutely blow the doors off of the Spartans because San Jose State, you say inept, I just say they're garbage.
They're bad. But like I said going to San Jose State, getting that game on the road, then coming back and playing Utah State, another very winnable game, that gives them momentum going to Air Force where they should have enough goods to beat them. I'm not counting that as a win by any means. I still say it's 50-50, but I think those two wins send them to Air Force. On paper, there is no question UNLV is a more talented team than the Falcons. No question about it.
Like I said, maybe the next five, the next five games are all games UNLV should win before.
Colorado State's the one you're worried about. First game you're not.
I'm not, because Colorado State is really down this year.
You're more worried about Fresno?
Well, yeah, but they should beat San Jose. They should beat Utah State. They should beat Air Force. New Mexico's not very good. And they should win at Colorado State before they go to Fresno on the 23rd of the month. But
what are you worried about Fresno for?
Well, because Fresno's
a very good team.
And a very well-coached team. Rodney Terry, I think, is maybe the best coach in the Mountain West Conference. But the one of those next five that I worry about is the Air Force game. And I'm going to be curious to see how they respond on Wednesday night. Because they should beat San Jose State. But, you know, they were beaten by a Boise State team that, quite honestly, I thought they could have won the game. You know, I didn't think Boise was leaps and bounds ahead of UNLV. There were just little things that the Rebels did, I think, that took them out of the game. So I'm going to be curious to see how they respond on Wednesday night.
The thing is what I saw again, and we talked about the obvious stuff, the guard play, but a good coach. Leon Rice is a guy that teaches fundamentals. And one thing about Boise State, they are always a fundamentally sound team. They're in position. They play well. And Leon Rice is the reason I believe that. You saw UNLV, and we saw this last year. We've seen this a lot with UNLV teams. They come out in the second half, and he was outcoached. It's that simple. Leon Rice saw in the first half what we need to do. They broke down UNLV's defense so badly in the second half that it was bothersome. And as I said, to the point that Brandon McCoy was a defensive liability, and you almost wanted him to put in Dembake because you felt like he would work harder. I don't know what it's going to take to get the fire lit under Brandon McCoy's ass. I take into account he is only 19 years old. I take into account he's only been playing basketball since he was in the eighth grade. I am taking that into account. But this guy has an NBA man's body. Not quite as much of a man's body as Shakur Justin, but he's got a man's body. Well, and it's 7 feet tall, Mags. You have got to find a way to make this guy more of a presence in a basketball game.
He doesn't have any confidence?
Confidence
at all. Like, he's just, he hesitates right before doing anything.
Well, it's just defensively.
I don't know if that's it. You know, I think we saw the absolute best of Brandon McCoy in the Arizona game when there was another quality big in there that
forced him. But he was outplayed by that quality big.
But that guy's probably a top three NBA. You know, DeAndre Ayton he absolutely lit up Arizona State last night.
Arizona State played great basketball last night, and lost in OT.
Yeah, I mean, he was a great player. You know, DeAndre Ayton's a really good player. So I think for Brandon McCoy, I'm not worried about him. I think there's little things in his game, like he needs to demand the ball a little bit more. I think he needs to be a little more mean, because he's a really nice kid. He's an intelligent kid.
Mean or just start to hustle?
No, I don't even think that's it. I just think he has to develop that killer instinct.
A chip, because Shakur Justin is a really nice kid, but you put him on a basketball court and he's a beast.
Yeah,
that's what we need to see. Yeah, I kept saying last night, Mags, I said if you could somehow take Shakur Justin's head off of him and put it on McCoy, you might have the number one pick in the NBA draft.
Yeah, although I wouldn't want that, because I think then we would lose Shakur Justin. But, I think Brandon McCoy is going to be fine. I just think, you know, for him, it's he's still, you know, a relatively young kid. You know, he's only 19. There's still, you know, I think his non-conference, a lot of fans have now put a lot of pressure on him. Maybe undeservedly, because look, let's be realistic. He was averaging, 18 and 10? That's really hard to do at the college level, especially a freshman.
No, it is. So, well, real quickly, Banks, I asked Brandon McCoy, or I asked Marvin Menzies in the press conference last night about McCoy, because I saw him early in the first half. We're talking probably 6-7 minutes into the first half, beckoning to come out, literally waving his hand and waving over to Menzies, "You got to take me out." I saw it again in the second half. I was talking to T.C. Martin about it, and he was saying, "No, I'm sure he was just frustrated, and, you know, he wanted to come off the court." I'm like, I can't imagine Menzies is letting him off the court because he's frustrated. That'd be a terrible lesson to learn. My own personal thought. And, of course, when I asked Menzies this, here's what he said about it, which is kind of what I figured he was going
to
say.
I saw Brandon McCoy a couple times beckon to you to come out of the game once early in the first half and I think once in the second half again. Was he tired or was
yeah.
it just?
You play 34 minutes. So our deal is, you pull yourself out and then you get back in when you're ready to go. So, you know, he played 34 minutes and had a double-double, 7-for-9 for the field. Should have got more touches, I thought, at times. But they did a good job of wedging him off the sweet spot, you know. I like him to be able to try to get deeper touches if he can. But at the same time, you know, he was effective. So sometimes, we got to work on educating our guys that, you know, it's got to be an inside-out game when you play teams that collapse like that. And you got to drive it for others. I think we did that in the first half, and I think we drove for ourselves the second half. It was significant, not significant, it was obvious to me that guys were trying to, everybody was trying to put it on their back and do it themselves and trying to make a play rather than playing with the others and bouncing for others and penetrating for others, which we did a good job in the first half. So we just got away from what was working, and that was the way it ended up.
You know, Mags, it's funny. If you listen to the question and the answer, I simply asked the guy, why did Brandon McCoy want to come out of the game? And I got almost a two-minute answer, which sounded to me like an excuse. Because all of a sudden you went into this whole soliloquy. All I wanted to know was the guy tired or was he frustrated? And I got this long answer about, well, we got away from what was going in the first half. None of that was what I asked. So whenever I get an answer like that, Chris, I think...
He's a politician.
I think he's simply making an excuse. As Brandon McCoy, he was frustrated himself with the kid, and what can he say? You know, when a kid wants to come out of the game and you're in a tight game against perhaps the best team in your conference, that's got to be a little frustrating for a coach, but what can you do but take him out when he's beckoning?
Well, I never have an issue with a college coach protecting a kid. You know, I really took issue with a former UNLV football coach. I won't name him, but... You could probably guess who it was. And he always, always blamed the kids. Oh, well, I had the right game plan. We had the right, we just didn't execute. You know what? These are college kids. You're a teacher. If you're a teacher in a classroom and your student fails a test, that's on you. You know, that's your job to teach. So I don't take issue with a college coach protecting his kids.
Well, do you take issue with a college coach when he goes nuts on a kid and screams and swears at him and pulls his hair?
I don't.
We saw one of the Boise State assistant coaches last night going nuts on one of his players.
I do take issue with that in public. If you want to do that in the locker room or behind closed doors, that's fine.
Megs, they heard his F-bombs in the third level.
Oh yeah,
that's
surprised they weren't crying.
That's not good. I don't like that. I can't respect a coach who berates a kid in a game. You know, look, I don't know who the Boise State player was, but whether he's 19 or 22, he's still a young man. He's still a kid. You know, and maybe when I was 22, I didn't feel that way. But now that I'm almost 40, I do. And it's like, you know, I think Mike Gundy, he said it best. I'm a man. I'm 40. Come to me. Come after me. You know, these are kids. And that's what they are. And, you know, I think a lot of times we put expectations on these kids that they're NBA players or they're NFL players, and the reality is they're not. You know, they're kids. They're still learning. A lot of them are still growing as people. And, you know, for a college coach and that assistant for Boise, shame on him for berating.
Oh, you should have heard it. It was great. I actually, it was comical watching it. I don't have a problem with it. I think that you got to
do it behind closed doors. Don't do it in front of an arena with 10,000 people.
The thing is, there's going to be
different. That just makes you look like an idiot.
Well, it did kind of make him look like an idiot a little bit, I guess, if you're looking at
it.
Well, here's
the
deal. We do got to move on. I want to get away from UNLV as we'll be talking about them all year. Mm-hmm. But we did get a chance to talk to Jordan Johnson yesterday.
That was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. And so, this is what he had to say. Missy got some great questions. And here's what was pretty cool. A guy that was really down, Chris, you know, I mean, they lost the game. She got this guy to laugh after the game, and I thought that was pretty cool.
He's so miserable.
And towards the end of the interview, but here's Jordan Johnson after yesterday's loss to Boise State.
All right, so Jordan, first game of the Mountain West Conference, obviously a disappointing game for you. We'll start off with, what do you take from this game to move forward?
take off from this game is just rebounding, make sure we get back on offense and get back on defense, boxing out and making sure we move the ball around to move the defense around.
First half you came out, you guys were kind of matching them toe-to-toe, but even in the first half and second half, really the inside interior defense, you guys seemed to struggle a great deal tonight. I haven't seen a lot of that. You guys have controlled the boards in almost every game you've played. What happened tonight that really gave Boise such an advantage on the inside?
Man, everybody go rebound, and we didn't have everybody boxing out, so that's probably going to be one of our big things that we focus on in practice next time is just boxing out and going to rebound.
A guy like Chandler Hutchinson, a lot of experience in the Mountain West Conference, really showed tonight. How good of a player is that kid?
He's pretty good. We just got to figure out a way to stop him next time.
You're one of the leaders of this team. Our guys started in the backcourt. You came in 11-2. You go out 11-3. Did that week at all layoff? I know you don't want to say, hey, nothing, no excuses, but you got an 8-day layoff. Did that hurt you at all, do you think?
Yeah, I think so, because we didn't have a chance to get up and down and just had a feeling of playing still. So that and just playing hard.
What did Coach Menzies say after the game?
Boxing out.
Just boxing out, get ready.
Getting back on defense, that's it.
One positive note, I know you got to go rest this one, but you got New Year's coming up, your first New Year's in Vegas. What are you going to do?
Be in the gym.
Come on, you got to get out a little bit, right?
Nah, I'm going to get right in the gym. Shoot shots in the gym.
Do you know about shakes and squats?
Shakes and squats.
You don't know about shakes and squats?
Squats or squats?
Squats.
No, I don't know what that is.
Okay, how many shakes do you do? How many squats do you do to look like that?
She's killing him.
Shakes and squats.
Listen.
Never heard of that?
No.
So
never.
How do you do? How do you work out? What do you do?
Oh, lift weights. That's it.
Yeah.
You don't
take any protein shakes.
Oh no,
nothing?
I don't do that. No.
That's what she says. She's looking for us. See if there's some magic, man. Some magic juice, like in the Bugs Bunny thing, right?
All right. Well.
Hey, listen. You have yourself a happy New Year's. We know you guys will be back on track soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Have a good day. You too. Thanks. Bye bye.
Out of line, it's 8:30, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. Missy Lynn, Magnum, and walking in studio, Bernie Fratto. You're here recording your Rebel Minute, right?
Yeah, the feature that airs after every game, and should be a doozy this week.
I wish you would have done it live. We should have just brought you in here to do it live, because why don't you go ahead and give me a mini soliloquy of what you're recording today.
That's a damn good word, man. I'm going to look that up as soon as I get home. I'm up to the S's. Well,
sad thing is, Brian doesn't know what it means.
I don't know what it means either.
I
heard somebody say it the other day on TV. It sounded good.
Yeah. That French girl you used to date, I think. Anyway, let me just put it this way. Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? This is exactly what the Rebels didn't need, was to drop their home conference opener against a team they could have and should have beaten. There were 11 lead changes, 10 ties. They led at halftime. But look, it's incredible how similar this looks to things that happened in the past, where the team comes out in the second half, Boise State has an 11-0 run and a 23-4 run. The Rebels, this is incredulous to hear this stat. They're out-rebounded 48-29. Amori Hardy and Jovan Mooring, two guys that have been pretty reliable, combined 2 for 18. Now, I could go on and continue to give a bunch of stats. Bench out scored 19-2. The reality of it is Boise State just looked more prepared. They looked more experienced. And in the end, they proved to be the better team. And that's a difficult pill to swallow, because when you head into conference play 11-2 and your only two losses are in overtime, you have more expectations. You're never going to like the way you lose, Brian. You're never going to like. But the way the Rebels lost last night was all that more difficult, because they didn't compete for long stretches, and that was pretty bothersome.
There were a lot of kinks in the armor last night that I saw. What was glaring to you? To me, I said it earlier, two words: box out. How do you have an inside presence of a Brandon McCoy? And like I said, I made excuses for him. He's 19 years old. He started playing basketball when he was in eighth grade. But this guy is 7 feet tall. And It was non-existent for a good portion of this game. It was so bothersome to continuously watch them get inside. Smaller guys, it didn't matter who it was. They continuously got inside and scored easy baskets against this team. How do you shore that up?
Well, first, hold that thought. I'm going to come back to it. The most glaring thing to me was the Rebels really couldn't solve the 2-3 zone. There were a couple of possessions in the second half where they got the ball swinging side to side and they found some gaps. Leon Rice worked over Brandon McCoy like a rented mule. They bracketed him the whole game in the low box. They double low posted him. And they made him work for everything. And I'm telling you, the poor kid by the end of the first half was gassed. He was gassed. He had 16 and 10, but he had not been in a fight like this probably his entire life against a, you know, fairly quality Division I team that has veteran players and has an NBA draft.
What about Arizona? I mean, he played against a guy twice as good as him.
They didn't defend him the same.
No, they
didn't. Arizona's defense was, by the way, that Arizona just out-athleted UNLV. UNLV could have won that game. Boise State, one of the things I've been saying, I have a segment every Tuesday with Ed and Clay, and I say, there's no question Menzies has brought in some talented players. The question is, can the whole become greater than the sum of its parts? Can they play together as a unit? They didn't last night. You saw a lot of their possessions. They were disjointed. Get the ball up the floor, one pass, no passes, long ball shot, long balls come off long. Leon Rice coaches the team how to rebound. Transition game going the other way. You saw the Rebels beating off the bounce against Prairie View A&M and against Northern Colorado. Why not Boise? So how do they shore up that defense? Practice, I guess, and awareness and a commitment, and they have to communicate and switch and understand what's at stake here. They reverted to their default mechanism too many times last night, Brian. Early shots in the shot clock that were bad shots. They missed 16 three-pointers. That's not their game anymore, nor should it be. Their game should be an up-tempo game, make the extra pass, break them down. They got two or three or four excellent low-post players in McCoy, certainly in Houston. Houston played an outstanding game.
Travell Beck,
Anthony Smith. Let's get to the rim and impose your will and maybe draw contact so you get a three-point play and play intelligently. Jovan Mooring, 34 minutes. I'm on record. I like Jovan Mooring. I think he's more effective if he plays 24 minutes.
See, I said I like Jovan Mooring as well. But, Bernie, how much of this is coaching? How much of this, we see the same thing, we see history repeat itself continuously with this UNLV run and Rebel team. And when I say that, I mean, how much of this can Marvin Menzies stop? I mean, how many times you got to tell a kid, look, make the extra pass, and when he doesn't make the extra pass, what do?
Well, I can tell you what Jimmy Johnson would have done. I can tell you what Bill Belichick would have done. I can tell you what
Leon Rice would probably do.
I can tell you what Jerry Tarkanian would have done, right? And by the way, that was probably the highlight of the evening. They honored the 1977 Final Four Hardway 8 team. Of course, Robert Smith part of that team. Let's talk about that team for just a second. They scored north of 100 points 23 times that season. And they didn't have a shot clock then, and they didn't have a three-point shot then. How's that happen? They didn't have a three-point shot then. Well, let's go back to your question. A team will always take on the personality of its field general. If Coach Menzies enables these kind of repeated mental mistakes that lead to a sequence and series of bad possessions, bad defensive sets, bad offensive possessions, all of a sudden you are on the wrong side of an 11-0 run and a 23-4 run. And when the Rebels led 43-37, I said, all right, they're gonna step on the gas here. Couldn't have been more wrong. And next thing you know, Boise's up by 13. But the same guys are on the floor. And he shortened his bench last night. And I hope he doesn't shorten his bench anymore because they really can go 10 deep. So is it coaching? Yeah. Yes, it is. Because if you enable that behavior repeatedly, and we were talking to Magnum off air, the telltale signs were there against Northern Colorado and against Pacific and even Mississippi Valley State where there were lapses. And lapses of judgment, lapses in terms of execution and making proper decisions with or without the ball. And it didn't cost them against those lesser schools that won't even finish 500 in lesser conferences. But Boise State's a top three team in the Mountain West. But this is what I think I know about the Mountain West. It was there for the taking. There are no great teams in this conference. Yeah, I like Nevada, but they couldn't beat Texas Christian or Texas Tech. They don't have a quality win. They lost here to USF. San Diego State, yes, they beat Gonzaga on their home floor, but they laid some stinkers as well. I saw Boise State against SMU. They were completely overmatched, lost by 23. What's the moral of the story? None of the Mountain West teams are really good enough to dominate on the road. So if you can take care of business at home, if the Rebels could go 8-1 or 9-0 at home, then you go 4-4 on the road or 4-5, you win 13 games. 13-5 will win this conference. Well, that plan got blown up. That didn't take long.
Finally, your expectations now. We're 14 games into the season. They've played their conference opener. I know that my expectations got increased after the first couple of games to see what this team has. I still think they're a team that's going to win 19 games this year. That means 8 more wins in conference. I think that's going
to
happen.
That'll only make them 8 and 10 in conference. Is that really acceptable?
No, of course not. But I
think you're kind of on point. I think we're headed toward that. Unless I see evidence to the contrary.
I think they're going to struggle on the road.
Yeah, let's handicap this just for fun real quickly. They're going to win at Viejas Center? No, they're not. They're not going to win in Reno. Not from what I saw last night. They're not going to win in Boise.
They're not going to win in Fresno.
Probably not going to win in Fresno. Right. So all of a sudden you start adding up the losses, 5, 6, 7. Now, can they run the table at home? From what I saw last night, no. They might go 7-2. I think they'll have one more. San Diego State could come in here and steal one.
Mm-hmm.
Reno could certainly come in here and steal one. Rodney Terry, his teams get better at Fresno State. You never know what
Larry Stacy's going to have some trouble up there in Colorado State, but I'll tell you what, that guy is such a good coach. Look what they did last year. Are you ever going to count that guy out?
Did you see how tough New Mexico played Reno yesterday as a 15-point dog?
I didn't see the game. I saw the highlights.
Lindsey Drew blocked three-pointer at the end, and they hang on to win 77-74. Look, this is a conference that was 2-18 against Ken Pom top 50 teams. The Rebels had to take care of home floor. They had to. And last night is bothersome. Like I said, you're never going to like the way you lose. But, Brian, when you look at the numbers and the number of shots missed and the fact that they were out-rebounded by 19, this isn't Villanova. This is Boise State.
Yeah, it is scary, but I don't think you're going to see that kind of lack of scoring from our backcourt every game. That's not going to happen where you're going to see this kind of performance by the backcourt. I know we've had some struggles, and we have seen when they went on the road, they really struggled in Iowa. Yeah, we got to get to the phone. I know, Mags. I'm sorry, man.
All right, one final thing.
Go ahead.
The Rebels were outscored in the paint 50-34 against Boise State, and they were out-rebounded by 19, and they couldn't solve the 2-3 zone. Good night, folks. You've been a great audience.
Bertie Fratto, check him out. Tell him about the Rebel Minute. When they can hear that all throughout the day, right?
Well, it's supposed to be airing 3, 4, 5 times a day on all the stations, and you can catch it on the LVSportsNetwork.com, under podcasts, under the press box, and also it'll be tweeted out. So thanks for having me.
Bernie Fratto. Appreciate it, man. We're going to get right back out to the phone lines. Not the phone lines, but we got Emily Van Buskirk. And I don't know if Kaylee Krish is on with her. Sideline Sass. Emily is also the lead college football and basketball writer for the Sports Fan Journal. Emily, what's going on? Sorry to keep you on hold so long. Of course, we're running behind on New Year's Eve.
I wouldn't expect it any other way. But I'm doing good. Finally back from all the bowl game travel and taking a break. And unfortunately, Kaylee couldn't join us today. She's out living her life without fan sports, so just me.
I'd like to be living my life studying the back of my eyelid still if I could be. But, hey, real quickly, we're gonna fly through this bowl thing. The Power 5 conference results to this point are staggering in a couple of respects. The Big Ten, I thought, was potentially the best conference in the country. I'm still not going to say that they are because we haven't seen the best teams of the Southeastern Conference play yet. There's four of them.
Brian, it's not even debatable. The Big Ten is the best conference in the country.
Mags, no, I'm telling you.
No, I don't care what. The SEC is overrated. They have two good teams.
I'm not going to say they're not overrated. I'm just going to say that the four best teams in the SEC haven't played yet.
Ohio State, Michigan State, Penn State did, even Purdue.
Oh, it's awesome. I think Michigan's going to beat South Carolina too to run the gamut on the Big Ten and go 8-0. The Big 12, 5-2 is about where I expected them to be. Little disappointed in the ACC, but the Pac-12, I knew they were the worst of all. But Emily, I almost put on a mask to cover my nose from the stench of just talking about the Pac-12. I mean, some of the games have been close and entertaining, but the overall record is disgusting.
It's been a definite fodder for Twitter. They've been having a field day with the Pac-12 bowl record, which is I guess it's comparable to what the Big Ten was in 2008, which has been a big point people are trying to make. But I'm not surprised by this because I said this at the beginning of the season. We had Jerry Palm from CBS on our podcast, and we talked about how the Pac-12 is not that good of a conference. And the fact that they were beating each other was not a sign of eliteness. It was just a sign of mediocrity. So now we're seeing that come out when they have to play other teams in big situations. So I'll tell you, I was at a few. The worst one that I was at was the Cotton Bowl. That was very hard to watch. So,
And to me, the Cotton Bowl was not that hard to watch.
I'm sure it was fun for you guys.
Well, there's only one reason. I hate Ohio State, but I mentioned it a little bit ago. I have a 7-team parlay. I've never hit a 4-teamer in my life. I'm 6 legs deep. Ohio State was one of the legs. I need LSU -3 over Notre Dame. And funny, that's the game that scared me the most. So it wasn't hard for me to watch. I loved it. I didn't have to sweat very much of that game. I could see that Ohio State was clearly the better football team in that game.
Yeah.
And the only win for the Pac-12 has been Utah, and that was in the heart of Dallas Bowl over Virginia, 30-14. They beat them pretty soundly, and it was actually a decent game to watch. But the most entertaining thing about the Pac-12 to me so far, that's Mike Leach, the coach of Washington State. You never know what's going to come out of that guy's mouth. Other than that, he keeps me entertained, but nothing else about the Pac-12, other than maybe a few players, guys like Bryce Love, have kept me engaged this season with the Pac-12.
Well, if you like Mike Leach, you're going to love next year because the Pac-12 is going to be loaded with weirdness. Mike Leach at Washington State, Herm Edwards at Arizona State, and Chip Kelly back in the Pac-12 at UCLA. The Pac-12 is getting weirder. They're not getting better. So you're going to love next year.
Well, at least weird is newsworthy and something to talk about. Real quick, as we move on, we've got some other games, obviously, still to go that are remaining. Penn State's win over Washington, pretty exciting. That'll tell you, Saquon Barkley, in my opinion, is going to be the first player picked in the NFL draft, and he should be. The guy runs a 4.340 in his pads, and we saw the damage that he did against Washington. And say what you will about the Pac-12, Washington's defense has been one of the things that has been consistently good throughout this season. You said earlier that you felt Washington was probably the best team in the Pac-12, and yet for the majority of this game, they ran all over that Washington defense.
Yeah, I know. That was about as indicative as you get of us thinking that there's going to be some good in the Pac-12 and some strength, but I don't know what it is about big game situations, but the Pac-12 has been struggling. Washington is a very succinct team, and I know that some of the players were not 100%. I think Dante Pettis was not feeling great, and there's a definite illness that's going around, but it doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand why teams that can play better are not playing better, and that's what we saw with USC and with Washington, and not closing out games. That's just a lack of mental toughness that I think the Pac-12 is missing. So yeah, I'm ready for next year.
No, I can imagine. 2018, the whole Pac-12 has got to be ready for next year. We got pretty much 5 games remaining on the bowl schedule. Of course, the playoffs will create another one after that. U of M, South Carolina, I do like U of M only because of what I've seen throughout the course of the bowl season in the Big Ten and what they've done. UCF and Auburn, I think, is a very interesting game. Central Florida, the lone undefeated Division I team left, ranked 10th in the country, playing an Auburn team that was looking like a team that could win a national championship less than a month ago, and then they took that bad loss to Georgia in the Southeastern Conference championship game, giving them their third loss. What do you make of this game? Do you think UCF has a chance to stay undefeated, and where will they finish in the rankings if they do beat Auburn?
I know, that's a really good question, and this is actually my favorite game, I think, that'll be coming up, and I do think UCF is going to win. I think that they're with Scott Frost behind them, it's going to be his final game. The players have bought into what he is doing so much. They would follow him, you know, into the mist if they needed to. So I think between his coaching experience, I love UCF's quarterback. I think Mackenzie Milton is one of the best quarterbacks in college football. He's very underrated, but his statistics were on par with what Baker Mayfield was doing. Granted, in a lesser, you know, conference, but still to not lose a game all season is extremely difficult. So obviously they're very good. And Milton ranks 5th in passing touchdowns and passing, 2nd in passing efficiency. and second in completion percentage. So I think UCF's going to beat Auburn. I think it's going to surprise a lot of people, and then you got to figure out where to put them and why didn't they make it into anything given that they're undefeated and they're that good. So it's going to raise a lot of questions, and I'm ready for them.
Going to be interesting. I just don't want to see Scott Frost crying after the game. I hope if UCF beats him, they just blow him out so I don't have to see him teary-eyed again. I like the guy. I don't mind seeing a man cry, but I just don't want to see it again. I've seen it like 3 times this year already. You got the Nebraska job. You're going to your alma mater. Please, there's no need to cry. It's all said and done. If you go undefeated, that is great, but you don't want your legacy to show you teary-eyed on the sideline. Notre Dame-LSU, a game I'm looking very forward to. That is the seventh leg of my parlay. I do have LSU, who I do like a lot in this game. They have really, the way they started the season, you thought they were going to be looking for a new coach by the season's end, and they have completely turned things around. Notre Dame, the exact opposite. They started the season like they would vie for a national title, and then they hit some serious stumbling blocks. Two teams going in different directions, but there's been a big break. So what is going to happen in this game, and what do you think? I'm hedging it. I got to go take Notre Dame because of my big parlay bet, but I really do like LSU in this one.
I think LSU, this is another one of those games you're not entirely sure how it's going to shake out. They've got the same record. They're both solid teams, but I think the fact that Notre Dame's going to be missing a few guys, I think they're going to be without a couple receivers and a couple tight ends. That's going to affect their offense, and their quarterback, Brandon Wimbush, is going to have to rely on different targets. That's going to be a change for him. So, and Notre Dame's not a huge, they're not great at adjusting like that. And we've seen that when they've had to play certain teams. So I'm going to go with LSU in this one just based on personnel and also surging and how teams have been doing. And I'm a big believer in that kind of how you finish your season. So I think I'm going to go with LSU.
All right. Well, you'd still hedge the bet if you were me, though, and take Notre Dame, right?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, how could I not? The $10 bet that's going to win me $850. I got to put a couple bones on Notre Dame, and then we go to the playoffs. Not too far from where we thought it would be. You've got the first game, Georgia-Oklahoma, which I think is going to be a spectacular football game. I give the intangible to Oklahoma simply because of the Heisman Trophy winner. Baker Mayfield has made me a believer, Em, and I am not going to be the least bit surprised if when it's all said and done, the Sooners aren't carrying around the crystal football.
So, okay, my question to you then is, what do you make of Baker Mayfield? He has the flu. He has not been doing any of the the off football field stuff. He was at Media Day and answered some questions, but they said he's not 100%. I love Baker, and I think he's a gamer, but do you think that's going to – I had this loop up until, and I'm still struggling with it. So I don't know how he's going to play a football game with it.
Well, I'll tell you this much. Georgia is going to be very tough. The key with Georgia is you've got to stop that run and force the freshman quarterback to beat you, which I think he can do, but Oklahoma is going to be a stout opponent. As far as Baker Mayfield and having the flu, I'm going to tell you I've had some of my best performances as an amateur athlete when I've been sick. And I think a lot of people and a lot of players, you dig deep because you're worried that you're not going to be at your best, and you still have all that athletic ability. You're just under the weather. I think Baker Mayfield is going to have a ridiculous game. This is right up his alley, and it's perfect because have a great game and he's sick. I'm telling you right now, I never believed last year I would have said I was on drugs if I'm about to say the statement I'm making, but I think Baker Mayfield is going to be a solid National Football League quarterback simply because he has the heart of Tim Tebow. But he's got the skills to take it to another level. And that's what I like about Baker Mayfield. I'm going with Oklahoma in this game still. I'm not even skeptical on it. I like Georgia, but I have seen some vulnerabilities with Georgia. And like I said, if they can somehow take away the run a bit, I think they'll give Georgia some problems. And in Alabama-Clemson, this is a really tough one, but I all of a sudden like Clemson based on the body of work I've been watching in the SEC. And Alabama just has not really been tested this season. They're definitely going to be tested on Monday night.
Absolutely. I just don't think you can bet against Alabama. I understand Clemson's a great team. These teams have met several times in high-pressure situations, and, it doesn't always come out the way we think it is, but I don't think you can bet against Alabama at this point. So I'm going to take them, and I'm going to be with you
and take Oklahoma, and then we're going to have a heck of a national championship game. So.
It'll be way cool. Nick Saban, I don't know. Dabo Sweeney, man. As much as you don't want to bet against Alabama, this guy's great. Listen, we got to run. Emily Van Buskirk, you got to check out Sideline Sass. I was going to have Missy. She watched it last night. We'll have you on again soon as we're running late. But Emily Van Buskirk, again, Sideline Sass. Check out the podcast with her and Kaylee Krish. It's awesome. They do it every other week. And, of course, Emily, the lead writer for college football and basketball for the sportsfanjournal.com. Check her out there as well. Great stuff. Always appreciate you, Em.
All right, thanks, guys.
Bye. Absolutely. Mags, we got to just keep rolling right along. Oh, we got to take a break. All right, we're going to take a real quick break. We'll come back. We'll get Todd Dewey on the line. We'll talk our NFL picks, and we'll try to fly through everything. Out of line, Fox Sports Radio. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. Blazing, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. Two happy hours every day, America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. Need I say more? Steph Curry, a record breaker. 38 points, no turnovers in only 25 and a half minutes. He is the 16th, it was his 16th game with 30 points in under 30 minutes. The only player in NBA history since they have instituted the shot clock. He is the only player in NBA history to do it. He was tied with George Gervin, the Iceman, at 15 of those. He passed him. The next two guys in the list, not too bad, Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan, both with 10 games of scoring 30 points in under 30 minutes. Steph Curry is the man, and he's blazing, and here's what he had to say after the game.
Yeah, you kind of don't really know what to expect because your body's been out and not in that game kind of atmosphere for almost 4 weeks. So really my only goal was just to play whatever that minute restriction was, get out, get some good reps, try to test my ankle out, see how healthy it was in that game environment. And obviously you make a couple shots early, you start to get a little rhythm and momentum and try to ride that way the rest of the game. So it was amazing to be out there and be playing again with my teammates It felt good to be back out there.
Steph Curry, blazing, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. Don't forget for Nightcap, we're not going to have time for it, but the Maple Leafs today, 12:30 at T-Mobile Arena. Missy and I will be there Tuesday night to see him play the Nashville Predators, reigning Western Conference champions. That should be a good one. We'll talk to James Neal, probably his former team. And real quickly, let's get to Dewey, man. We've got the NFL picks. We are all bunched up now here at the end. Dewey still leads the way, 10-6. I have crept up, won my last four. I'm 9-7. Mags, 8-7-1. Missy just joined the crew. She is 1-1. At least you got back to 500. Dewey, man, what's up, brother?
Not too much. How you doing, brother?
Hey.
Happy New Year, everybody.
We appreciate you. Happy New Year to you, my friend. Listen, we got to fly with our picks today. I will say this. We are going through the Super Bowl, so everyone's still got a chance to win this thing. And, Dewey, who are you going with today, man?
I'm going to go with Jimmy GQ and the 49ers over the Rams, who are resting their starters.
A lot of the sharps like that. The Rams.
49ers.
Niners are actually 4-point favorites, and they're playing at the Rams. But, hey, that's a rivalry, and they always play them well.
I got down at 3. You're not going to give me 3?
No, we're going with your paper, man.
Yeah, he burned me a few weeks ago.
It's a Review Journal. Sunday's Review Journal line is what I go with.
I go by the Westgate, but. Yeah.
Well, hey, I'm going with the Review Journal. That's because Dewey's there. So, anyways, all right, Dewey, you got the 49ers.
Never bet the paper.
Last I'm going to ask you before I let you go, Patriots, are they going to repeat? Be honest. Don't be a homer here. Are they repeating?
Well, it's pretty it's wide open, really, but I think they're definitely going to get there if they get the home field advantage, which they should, by beating the Jets. I think they get a great chance to get back, and I'm seeing them, the Vikings winning and playing the Super Bowl at home, and the Pats beating the Vikings in the Super Bowl.
I think that's a pretty good pick. Dude, okay, he's got the 49ers. Mags, who are you going with? Dewey, we appreciate you. We'll talk to you soon, brother.
Thanks, man.
I can't even believe I'm going to do this, and I really wanted to take the 49ers, but I have to catch Dewey, so I'm going to go with another bad team. I'm going to take the Colts.
The Colts
laying, what does the paper have it at?
The paper has the Colts. Hold on, I'm looking for it right here. Let's see.
Because I got it at 4.5 the other day.
I have it at 5.5 right now. Colts, right,
I'll still take the Colts. Texans are terrible. They've been blown out a lot lately. No DeAndre Hopkins. Tom Savage stinks. I'm going to go with the Colts in Chuck Pagano's last game.
Okay.
Yeah, and I said I'm doing Titans.
You're doing the Tennessee Titans?
Tennessee,
I am going
baby.
With you.
Tennessee,
that's my pick.
Whiskey,
me and Missy are together on the Tennessee Titans today. I like them as well. Out of line, we are back
there
every Sunday. We'll be back next week, 8 to 9, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, home of the Vegas Golden Knights. We'll see you next week. We're out.